This week, we talk with Bill Dunney. He's from the Gala Factory Software Company. He's an iPhone software developer. Plus, Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin, as well as David Cohen, Guy Searle, and me, Tim Robertson. My Mac Podcast number 192.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And it's the week after the great big iPhone launch, and my name is Tim Robertson. I'm joined by Guy Searle. Hello, Guy Searle.
Hello, Tim.
I understand that you've rushed out and bought an iPhone. No?
Let me think about that. No.
No. Okay.
No.
But David Cohen, on the other hand, has an iPhone 3G. Hello, David Cohen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, but, you know, I don't have an iPhone G3 like you do.
No. I was blessed. In fact, I was quite surprised that I ordered it on Thursday night.
I remember when we talked to you on the last podcast, It was on order.
That's right, and it arrived at 9:15 Friday morning.
Wow.
And, wow.
I was reading on Twitter about all these people who are having all these activation problems and queuing in the rain and all this sort of thing, and I was chuckling to myself. And I arrived at home, and I was obviously at work. And when I got home in the evening, I activated it straight away, no problem at all.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's start there. Last Thursday, which I'm now referring to Apple Black Thursday, was when your hardware launch makes the front page of CNN.com, and it's not a positive story. It's about all the woes that your new customers are going through. That's probably not a good thing.
No.
So, what do you think happened that day, David?
I think a lot of things went wrong. I don't think all of them were Apple's fault.
I think the majority was Apple's fault, but I'll get to that in a minute.
I'm not so sure about that. I mean, certainly here in the UK, O2 pretty much dropped the ball as well. At lunchtime on Friday, I went down to I actually put this up on my blog post on the site, but I went down to the Trafford Centre and spoke to the guys at Carphone Warehouse and at the O2 store. And they were pretty upfront that O2's activation system had fallen down. You know, that was where the real problem was early in the morning on Friday for UK buyers. So I don't think it was all Apple, but yeah, they have to carry some responsibility for what went wrong. But you know, they sold a million units, so I don't think they probably care too much.
Guy, what's your take?
I think that Apple made one basic mistake that they were trying to do too many things at one time.
They were trying to
put out MobileMe, which had its own problems. They were trying to put out, you know, the new version of iTunes. They were trying to put out the App Store. Just all this stuff trying to go on at one time. That all of these releases should have been more layered.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree with that, and the reason I disagree with that is that no matter how smoothly any one of those things could have gone, there would have been somebody somewhere criticizing and turning it into a Let's Knock Apple story. So I think if they're going to have Let's Knock Apple stories, then I think they figured, well, let's do everything all at once, and then it's only one round of bad publicity rather than three or four.
Yeah, but I would disagree with you, David, and let's take it point by point. First, Apple releases iTunes, an updated version. What was it?
7.7.
That went actually pretty smooth. I didn't see a lot of problems with that, although as we were recording this, I should say I fired up iTunes on my computer. It didn't see my library, and everything is just all hosed right now. So when I'm done recording, I'm going to reboot my computer. I'm going to run Disk Utility, see if that fixes it. And if not, I'm going to go to Time Machine and see if that will take care of the problem. I really hope it does, because, I mean, all my content is still there, but all my ratings are gone, at which point in different movies I've stopped, you know, I've paused them. So it's just going to be a nightmare. Everything's going to resync. My iPhones, all my playlists are gone. I mean, it's just a nightmare situation if I can't resolve it. But iTunes comes out, that's okay. MobileMe comes out. Massive, massive problems. It's not working at all for most people. Then it's working a little bit for some people.
Yeah.
And as we've talked about in the past, .Mac for the last 6 weeks has been extremely flaky. Sam Levin, who'll be on the show later, He couldn't even send email or receive email through .Mac for like 3 weeks. Now, I don't care what they're preparing on the back end to launch MobileMe.
You've got to keep the current stuff running.
And this isn't like Gmail where it's free. This is a paid service. This costs $100 U.S. dollars, so it's like $20 in the U.K. or the England or the Europe or anywhere else but the United States. It's $100 a year, and you can't even send or receive email for weeks and weeks at a time. That's unacceptable. I mean,
I agree.
It was a fiasco.
I mean, in fact, actually, MobileMe, the problems they've had with it, I was toying with the idea of moving one of my mail accounts to MobileMe so I could get push email with the iPhone.
Yeah.
And I've decided not to do that. I'll stick with it. It's more reliable.
Yeah, I would definitely hold off on that for a bit.
Now, the other side of that, and Guy Searle, you could probably attest to this, as the guy who writes a whole lot of iWeb articles for MyMac.com, iWeb and MobileMe isn't working right. It's still not working right to this day. If you created something in iWeb, it's all funky up there on the website right now.
Well, when those reports first came out, I went and I looked at the MacParrot.com site that I haven't upgraded since probably October of last year, and it's still running okay. There's no problems with it. I was actually in an Apple store recently. And, they've got their iPhones up there that you can play with. And it came up on both an iPhone and a Touch with no problems.
But if you happen to have iWeb and you were creating your website right now and you tried to publish it, even to this day, right now, as we record this, it's not working right. You're getting all kinds of errors.
Yeah, it is definitely slowing down. I think that MobileMe is still having some problems. As a matter of fact, it's so bad that Apple has gone ahead and given people a free month on top of their year-long subscription. They're giving everybody a free month to try to kind of make up for it.
Yeah. Well, the other problem, iPhone 2.0 software comes out. Now, this isn't the new iPhone that we're talking about. This is the software that current iPhone users, such as myself, can download, upgrade their telephones, their iPhones, and take advantage of all the new software and features of the iPhone. The problem here is Apple releases it the same day that they sell the new iPhone. What I can't understand is, and Apple knew that they were going to sell a boatload of iPhone 3Gs. Let's not pretend that they didn't know that this was going to happen, that they were going to sell a bunch of them. They also knew that everybody who owned a current iPhone is going to be trying to download this software. And when you upgrade your iPhone to the 2.0 software, it has to reinitialize your phone. It has to turn it back on. Why Apple didn't release this 2 days before, say on Tuesday, when they generally send out new software, why they didn't do it on Tuesday so they could avoid the problems with the 3G phone and all the new customers trying to activate their service through iTunes, as well as current users, of which there's millions of, I think it was a colossal blunder. And I can't believe that nobody at Apple foresaw this problem.
I think the blunder wasn't so much the fix wouldn't have been so much in the order that you just said. I think Apple would have been better off not releasing iPhone 2.0 software for their existing customers until after the 3G iPhone was launched. Part of the problem is if they had gone ahead and released the software, the new software for the iPhone, then there may have been some people that have said, this isn't so bad, I'm not going to buy a new iPhone.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And also as well, that would mean that if they'd release it on Tuesday, then that mean people would start writing a review of the 2.0 software. And, if they found things they didn't like in it, then that would be creating some negativity around the iPhone 3G launch, which they didn't want. But I think one of the things you have to remember is a lot of this is driven by the man at the top. And the way he likes things done, and I'm sure that he's very much into the secrecy and the Big Bang launch and the surprise marketing and everything. And I'm sure this was the way he wanted it done. And I've no doubt whatsoever that over last weekend and this week, he's been banging heads around inside Cupertino, And probably, I would imagine, a couple of guys have been fired and, you know, trying to straighten things out. I think the fact that, they've apologized over MobileMe and have offered a month's free service kind of illustrates, I mean, that's kind of Apple speak for, you know, we really dropped the ball on this and we're really sorry about it. I think for the rest of it, I think they'll just, you know, keep quiet and let it roll on.
Do you think,
well, David, let me ask you something. Do you think that Apple anticipated actually selling this many phones this quickly?
I don't know, really.
I would say definitely.
You would have assumed that a good percentage of the existing iPhone customer base would be looking to upgrade. And, you know, there was plenty of, I mean, certainly what happened over here is, you know, O2's website got knocked offline as soon as they started taking pre-orders. They sold out their entire stock of pre-orders in about half a day. So that was the Monday before the actual launch on the Friday. So that must have given them a pretty good an idea about what the level of interest in buying the new phones were. So I think they must have known that it was going to be, you know, it was going to be close to a million, if not a million. And the difficulty may have been that having received reports like that at the beginning of the week that the level of interest was that high, that doesn't leave them an awful lot of time to scale up their infrastructure to cope with it. So I suspect they thought, well, we'll do the best we can, and if a few people have to wait a few hours to activate their iPhones, then so be it. I mean, it actually was exactly the same last year when they launched the first one.
Yeah, but the difference is, though, for existing iPhone users, David, was that you have a telephone, this is your phone, you upgrade to the new software, and then you're not able to use your phone for hours at a time until iTunes resolves its problems. Could you imagine the situation where this is someone's only phone and they had some kind of emergency? I think that Apple deservedly got a huge black eye last Thursday. I think they completely dropped the ball on almost every single aspect of this. And I think they deserve a black eye. Do you disagree?
I do sympathize with your sentiment. I think ultimately at the end of the day, they're probably more concentrating on the million units sold and not so worried about a few people who might have had a few hours of downtime.
It's not just a few people. I mean, this was very, very widespread.
Well, however many it was, I think, you know, it's been and gone now. It's in the past. They'll hope that people are so happy with the new experience that they'll forget about the teething problems they had actually getting the update up on their phones.
I don't know. I think a lot of people are going to remember this the next time something like this comes out. I think when the version 3 of the iPhone is released, I think a lot of people are going to stay home this next time. They're not going to sit in line. They're going to say, "Ooh, I'm just going to wait because, God, I remember last time when I got my iPhone or when I upgraded my iPhone, I didn't even have an iPhone that I could use for hours. That was insane. Especially if this is your business guy, you're on the road or, you know, this is your business phone. A lot of people work from their mobile phone now. And you couldn't do anything for hours at a time. That's completely unacceptable. This isn't like an iPod that you couldn't use. This is your telephone.
Yeah. No, I think people will be more cautious about jumping in with the upgrades in the future. It's interesting. We don't have any numbers on how many iPhone 3Gs were sold to new customers as opposed to people who are upgrading from their old phones.
I don't think it really makes a difference. A sale's a sale, right?
Well, the thing is, the point I was trying to make is that even if the experiences people have this time around puts them off with the next generation of iPhone as it comes out,
they already have one.
The question is, you know, if it's mostly new people buying them, then those are people who are new to the Apple experience as opposed to people who have been bitten before and might be a little bit shy. Now, if it's mostly new people, then, you know, next time the level of interest might be even higher than it was this time around. Because, you know, I think what last weekend demonstrates to us is the iPhone as a product line is building momentum, it's building interest. It was crazy this time around than it was last time. You know, clearly plenty of people are buying into it as a platform. So it'll be interesting to see whether these sort of experiences do put people off or whether, in fact, you know, for every 10 or 15 people who've had a bad experience and say, no, I'm not going to do that again, there's another 100 people who say, I've never had an iPhone before and I'm going to buy one on this time around.
I don't want to be a negative Nilly through the whole show, but and I just made that up. I don't know if that's a term that anyone's ever used in the history of the planet, but I kind of liked it. I like it, negative Nilly. But let's talk about the iPhone 2.0 software and the App Store. Now, I was trying to think about... I had a job. Let me back up. I had a job, which I no longer have. But one of the guys that were at this job was an iPhone user, and he's not a Mac guy at all. He's a PC guy. And he went and downloaded the pre-release iPhone 2.0 software before it was officially released. A lot of people were doing that on Thursday. And I wasn't one of those people, as I said last week's show. I was going to wait till Apple officially releases it through iTunes and upgrade that way. And I should say, going back a little farther, I didn't have any problems at all updating my iPhone. None. It did it. It rebooted. Everything was fine. It activated immediately. I had no problems at all. That being said, I do have the iPhone 2.0 software on here, and he was trying to say that, you know, the iPhone 2.0 software and the App Store and all these cool applications that you could get, it's like the beginning of the Macintosh again. And it didn't sit right with me. It didn't sound right. I didn't like that analogy. What I would say that the App Store and the applications that you can get for your iPhone right now is more like is the very early Apple II days, in that most of the software that you can get for the iPhone right now is virtually useless compared to what you could do on your computer. It's very basic applications with very basic functionality. There's no killer app on the iPhone right now. There's nothing out there that you have to buy an iPhone to get this app like you had to buy an Apple II to get VisiCalc back in the day. So it's more of a Wild West mentality where you're getting more crap than good stuff on the App Store right now. Useless applications. About the coolest thing about it, for me anyways, is... well, we'll get into what I think is cool on the App Store in a little bit later. But the games are pretty cool, although most of them are pretty simplistic. That being said, I don't see this as a huge revolution right now. I see it more as early Apple II days, where you're just getting a lot of crap thrown your way, and it's the new users that are going to kind of drive what they want on their iPhone, and then the developers will figure it out in the long term.
Well, one other part that you could use for an analogy there is that most of the software that's available through the App Store is all homebrew stuff, you know, relatively small developers.
That's exactly what the Apple II days were like. You didn't have big developers like Microsoft back then because there was no big developers like that. So it's a Wild West mentality. It's the small developers. They're kind of rushing stuff out. And in the quality in some of the programs, a lot of the programs shows that they were rushed out. It really does.
I think you have to cut some of the. I mean, I do agree with you. I think
that's not a negative. I'm not saying that's a bad thing, by the way.
I've been generally disappointed with a lot of the stuff I've stuck on my iPhone.
Well, let's start with there. Let's start with what you like, what you've downloaded, David. Not everything, but some of the stuff that you've downloaded, what you like and what you don't like.
In fact, I haven't put that many programs on. I mean, I've not.
Oh, geez, I'm on my sixth page already. I got to page six times to get the new stuff.
Well, I've not paid for anything yet for a start, because I'm not going to pay for stuff until I know from other users that it's good. You know, particularly as the software is a little bit more expensive over here than it is in the US. So that's point one. Of the free stuff I've looked at, some of it's been really good. Some of it is kind of okay, and it's five minutes, and some of it is absolutely terrible, and you think, how on earth did this ever get released? But just before I sort of comment on specific applications, I think it's worth bearing in mind, most of the developers couldn't actually run it on working hardware.
Yeah.
Because of the nature of the Apple license agreement for the SDK. They obviously had a fixed deadline, so they had to kind of get it out when it was done in time for that deadline. And obviously they've not had any beta testing or been able to have feedback from real end users. And I think the nature of some of the software we've seen reflects the fact that they've just not been able to beta testing. Because if you're writing code, it doesn't matter how good you are as a coder, you're too close to a project. You know, you're going to miss things that actually other people say, well, what's it do that for? Or, you know, how come when I do things this way, it locks up or it doesn't work properly? And so I think most of the software reflects the fact that it doesn't have that user feedback. Having said that, of the applications that I have got loaded, I've got a couple of games. I've got a game called I think it's called Tap Tap. It's a bit like Guitar Hero for the iPhone.
Oh yeah, I've got that too. Yep. That was a free application too, wasn't
that's
it?
That's a free. As I say, I've not paid for anything.
Tap tap. Yeah, the problem with that game is my fingers keep getting in the way. I can't keep my fingers where I want them and play it really accurately. Although it doesn't seem to be very accurate to begin with.
No, but it's kind of fun and it's an interesting concept. And you can see, I mean, the thing is, you look at that and you say, wow, they could really do Guitar Hero on here, and it would probably be really good.
Not really, when you think about it, because with Guitar Hero, you got to have your fingers on a fretboard, and then you got to strum. How are you going to see anything if you're doing that on the screen that you're supposed to see the notes coming? I don't see it happening.
We'll see. We'll see whether Guitar Hero comes down the line. But I was interesting, and I've had some fun playing on that. I actually quite enjoyed that that free... advertising application that you sent me, Tim, the iPint from Carlsberg.
Now, that's a cute application.
You know what? Everybody I've shown that to is really, really impressed with it.
Do you want to explain what that is? I mean, there's a game part of it that I think is kind of useless, but what you can do after you win a round that you could pour, it looks like your screen has liquid in it.
So the idea of it, it's promoting Carlsberg Lager. So the idea is that you play a game, and the game is you're sliding a pint of lager over a traditional English bar that's covered in tubs of peanuts and other pints and people's hands and that sort of thing. And you hold the iPhone flat, and you use the accelerometers to sort of twist it, kind of like you would with those Mercury mazes or a marble game or something, to actually direct this pint down the bar to somebody's hand.
Yep.
And if you do that successfully, there's three levels of difficulty. If you do that successfully, then it rewards you with an iPint. And the iPint basically turns the screen of the iPhone into an empty frosted beer glass, and then you see the beer fill up from the bottom. And as you twist or shake the iPhone, you can see the level of the beer is moving, and then it fills up, and then you literally pour the iPhone as if it was a glass of beer, and the beer drains away.
And it's everybody fabulous.
Everybody I've shown to is absolutely amazed by it.
Yep.
They really are. I mean, it's a fun, free advertising, viral marketing type application.
Absolutely.
It's really clever. It's really well coded. And what I find impressive about it is it really shows the possibilities, I think, of using the iPhone for these sorts of applications where it's just a free fun thing you download to promote things. And, you know, if it's coded well, I think it's really clever.
There's a couple of applications I like, too. Here's one.
Yeah, I have that.
It's a little lightsaber. It's virtually useless, but it's kind of cool. One application that I'm really, really impressed with, and I think that this is the application that I'm more impressed with than any other, is called Remote. What Remote will do, it will allow you to control either iTunes on your computer or your Apple TV. Now, you think, well, you've got a remote for the Apple TV, and how useful is this? Until you've actually used it and you've experienced it, you really don't get an idea of how great this application really is. I was in the other room controlling my iTunes library, and it was playing music. It also let me launch videos on my computer and play podcasts. It's fabulous, and there's like no latency. As soon as I hit pause on the machine, on my iPhone, it paused the music on the computer. I mean, it was instant. There was almost no latency at all. It's fabulous. It's a great application.
How much is that?
It's free. It's from Apple, and it doesn't cost a dime.
And the great thing about that as well is that, for me, it really fills in a missing gap in things like the Airport Express.
Yes.
Which, obviously, you know, is a Wi-Fi router that has a headphone socket on, and you can stream music from your Apple, from your Mac, or your Windows PC from iTunes to the Airport Express, and then play out speakers. So if you're in another room, you can send music from your Mac to it. But obviously, without a remote, that's great if you just want to put a playlist on and then sit there. But you can't control the volume or anything like that. Whereas with remote, you can do all of that.
Yep, it's fabulous. It's a great application. The only thing that I wish that it did was if I played videos, that it would actually play the video on my iPhone. That would be cool. You know, it give you the option, do you want to watch it on your iPhone or do you want to watch it on, you know, either the Apple TV or the Mac? And it doesn't do that. I hope that they release a version that will do that. So basically, I'll stream movies from my Mac to my iPhone. That would be extremely cool.
Yeah.
One of the applications that, other than remote, and this one kind of blew me away, and I wasn't even going to check this out, to be honest, until I read Roger Bourne writing a story about it. It's called Shazam. What Shazam does is it listens to the music that you can hear. Say you're, I'll give you exactly the demonstration that I put it through. I was in the gas station a couple days ago, and they were playing a, what was it? It was a U2 song. Now, I knew what the song was, but I thought, I'm going to test this application. I pull out my iPhone, I launch Shazam, and there's a button that says Tag Now. So I hit Tag Now, and this dial starts spinning around on the iPhone as it's listening to the sound. Now, I thought, you know, it's not going to pick up the music very well because, number one, it's a gas station. Number two, the sound coming from the gas station speaker sounded pretty crappy. But it worked. It actually knew what song it was. And it gives me the album art. It says this is YouTube New Year's Day. I can click it. It says I can preview and buy now New Year's Day through iTunes. iTunes. It's all through iTunes. But it also found a link to YouTube music video. So I could watch the music video on my iPhone through this application.
Yeah. It's very cool.
It works like a dream.
I was at a Kylie concert tonight before I came on the podcast, she was playing a lot of songs from her new album that we'd not heard before, and I actually fired up Shazam for one of the songs. I thought, oh, this is quite good, I might try and find this one, and fired up Shazam and just hit the tag button again, and just over the audio from the concert while I was stood there in the crowd, it picked up the name of the song and gave me that, and that, I've got that saved on my iPhone for later.
Now,
well, hopefully that was a better experience than Tim's gas station.
Well, another time I was actually in the car, and I was listening to the radio, and some music came on, and I tried it again. Now, this was much cleaner. I figured it's definitely going to hear what it is, but this is an older song. Will it find what I'm looking for? And I was surprised that it did. And let's see if it... I just tried to look at it in iTunes, and it said, it's not there. No longer in iTunes. So I'm like, what the heck? The item you're requesting is not available, so that's kind of weird. It's not finding the song in iTunes now. Maybe it's one of those that Apple removed for whatever reason.
Yeah. But Shazam, though, does illustrate one of the things that I think is concerning me about the App Store, and that's there's a bit of a feeding frenzy starting to develop around the App Store. There was that whole business when it first launched that some people had put spaces in front of their application names to bring them to the top of the alphabetical lists.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of companies that are, you know, they're smelling a cash cow, and they're trying to cash in early. And, you know, Shazam is free at the moment, but apparently it's not going to be free for long. It's only free for a limited period.
But don't you think that that's fair? I mean, this is an application that I find extremely useful. If you're somewhere and you've got your phone and you hear the song, you're like, I really like that song. You pull out Shazam, you click a button, it listens to it, it tells you what the song is. You could buy it right there in iTunes. Maybe you can even watch a video of it in YouTube like mine. Why shouldn't the developer get that? Why shouldn't he just give it away forever for free?
No. If it was an application you could buy, I wouldn't have a problem with that. But they're talking about doing it as a subscription service. Now, I'm not going to pay a few dollars a month just so I've got the convenience of being able to identify the odd song every now and again.
But if you're 20 years old and your whole life is revolving around music and you're constantly listening to the radio and, you know, they'll play song after song after song and you don't know who it is. It could be right in the middle of a string of five songs. And you're buying a ton of music, do you think it might be worthwhile to you then? I mean, obviously, you and I probably aren't the demographic that's going to have a subscription service to get this.
But you know, I think you know, music subscriptions is not the way Apple and iPods and iPhones work.
Do you think, though, that if you're right and the subscription service is a bad idea, don't you think that the developer will say, ooh, this isn't working, we're going to go back to either a paid version of this or another free version and make our money somehow? I think that's probably more likely. Do you agree? Are you still there, David?
Did we lose David?
I think we might have lost David. Or unless I made him so mad that he just said, heck with it, I'm not going to talk to you. Are you there, David? Nope, we lost David. So we'll bring him back into the conversation. What do you think, Guy? Do you think that as a developer, do you think that if something's not working right for them, at least in my mind, they're just going to say, well, we're going to have to change our pricing or our business model to accommodate what does work?
I think subscription services for some of these apps is the wrong way to go.
I agree. I don't think that a subscription service is going to work at all, but don't you think they have the right to try it if they think that that's going to be successful for them?
Only if Apple will let them. I mean, let's face it. This is Apple's ballpark, and you have to play by Apple's rules. And right now, with the iPhone being as popular as it is, you know, if you want a piece of the pie, well, you know what, you got to take raisins or whipped cream with that as well.
Let me tell you some of the other stuff that, because we're having technical difficulties getting getting David back on. Yeah, I'm going to try bringing him back in on the podcast here. Skype sometimes acts buggy, and I don't know, for some reason he just tried. You still there, David?
I'm here now.
Okay, good.
I don't know what happened
there. Yeah, you just kind of dropped off right in the middle of my rant. But we moved on already. We were talking bad things about you.
Fair enough.
Some applications that I've downloaded, I've decided that they were completely useless. I got this program called Scratch. I don't know if you looked at this, David.
No.
It lets you, you know, you remember back in the 80s when people were scratching on records and for rap songs and stuff?
All right, yeah.
That's what this is. So I'll give you a quick demonstration. I'm going to go with hip-hop beats. And then there's a little record, and I can just scratch the record.
Uh-huh.
Kind of useless.
Yeah.
And I don't, it doesn't work very well. But hey, I did give it a try. One of the games that I actually paid money for is called Enigmo from Pangea Software. Now, this is a very unique game. I've played this on the Mac, and it works fabulous. It doesn't work so fabulous on the iPhone, and let me explain why. Let me first tell you what the application does. You got to get a droplet of water that's coming out of a faucet into a bucket. Sounds simple enough. The problem is the bucket and the faucet are nowhere near each other. So it gives you like a trampoline so you can bounce the water droplets off of that and try to aim it where it needs to go. But as the levels progress, it gets progressively more difficult. It's farther away, it's behind walls, that sort of thing. So you're putting these different objects to try to redirect the droplets of water until you get the 40 droplets of water you need in your bucket to move to the next level. It works, like I said, really well on the computer. I have an older aunt who just loves this game. She's been playing, if not this one, then games that are very similar that does the same thing for years. I thought this would be a perfect game for the iPhone. That's why I bought it. The problem is it's so difficult to move things around exactly the way you want them on the screen. I don't have the biggest fingers in the world, and I'm not very clumsy, but I can't get the objects to rotate where I want them to, and that's kind of a problem. I believe this program was either $7.99 or $9.99, and it's probably the one application that I wish I didn't buy at this point. I mean, it's so difficult to control, and I really want to play the game. That's the sad part. I want to play it. So, Enigmo, I would say definitely skip that. I did pick up Solitaire. I think it cost $1.99. And I picked up Solitaire so my wife can play Solitaire on my iPhone. She loves Solitaire, and, you know, I played it a couple hands, and it works great. You just, you know, grab the card, move it where you want. If it's an ace, you can just double tap it, and it'll go where it's supposed to go. It works well. So no complaints about Solitaire, except $2 for a game of Solitaire. Well, you know, it comes free with every single PC. So if you ever had a PC, you can play the Solitaire, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah.
Let me see. Donnie suggested a game called Aurora Faint. I tried it. I just didn't get it. He said he didn't either, but he kept playing it. Now he's hooked on it. So it's one of those games that, you know, it was free. So I'm not too worried about it. I'll probably eventually, I'll try it sometime. There's a game called Ha Ha, and this is one of your virtual marketing ones, David.
Yeah.
You basically paint the Joker's face on pictures from your,
yeah,
that you
yeah,
take I on the phone.
I heard about that.
It crashes all the time.
Yeah, well, you know, this is the thing. I think the problem is that, you know, people are going to struggle with applications that haven't been well beta tested are going to cause some problems. I mean, I'm using Twitter Later, which is a free Twitter application. I had a look at that on Twitter, that and Twitterific.
The free version?
And I preferred the look of Twitter Later. It's got a cleaner interface, but it's locked up on me a couple of times. Which obviously is not kind of what you
want. I've found that a lot of applications this first go around are very, very buggy. Now, I've heard developers say that actually it's crashing the way it is. That has more to do with Apple's 2.0 software for the phone rather than their application itself. And I'll accept that as face value, but there are some applications that never crash on me, such as Shazam. I've never had that crash on me. Dot Game has never crashed on me. Remote has never crashed on me. eBay has never crashed on me, although the usefulness of that is dubious at best. Monkey Ball has never crashed on me.
Thank God.
That was the first game that I bought, and it's probably the most difficult to play for me, because to move the monkey, I literally have to move the phone away from my field of view, and so I'm moving my head back and forth trying to follow the action, and it's just not intuitive. AIM, let's talk about AIM. Did you download that and try it yet, David?
No, I haven't. I don't have an AIM account, so...
It works with .Mac as well.
Yeah?
Yep. If you have a .Mac account, it'll work just the same. I've used it, but I haven't actually chatted with anybody on it yet. You know, as a matter of fact, as we talk, I'm going to launch AIM on my iPhone. And I'm going to see if it'll actually, you know, let me chat with someone. Oh, let's see. I believe Sam Levin. Yes, he's there. And, you know, I just noticed somebody else on iChat, and that's Lee Givens. I wonder if he forgot we were recording a podcast tonight. Mm. Doesn't really matter at this point, because we're going to wrap up the show here pretty quickly. But as we chat, I'm going to, let's see, where is he? I just lost Sam. Did Sam? Nope, there he is. I'm going to try a chat with Sam. And I think someone just sent me a message. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
That was weird. Someone just emailed me. Florida kid. Okay, Guy Searle, you're doing it. So, and you can hear that it's working and it's showing up. And it's okay. It works fairly well. One thing I don't like is I can't rotate the screen to make the... Okay, now I'm going to leave that application because that's getting annoying. I can't rotate it so I can use a keyboard in portrait mode, which to me is a lot easier. It makes the keys a little bit bigger and I can type better. Doesn't work that way. But the other application that I did want to mention that I am in love with a few exceptions, is AOL Radio. Man, this was an application that just works great. My biggest problem with it, however, is it won't work if you hook this up to a music playing device that connects to the dock on the iPhone, such as my Drive Plus Play in the car. If right. I plug it in, it won't work.
That's do you think that's copyright issues or?
No, it's because I don't think these applications are designed to send an audio signal like that out through, and that the iPhone recognizes that this is something that's not compatible with it technically, so it doesn't route the sounds through the Drive Plus Play. So it doesn't work that way, but everything else, it works just fine. You have stations, and there's just you just scroll through this list of genres or all stations. They have AOL Radio as well as CBS Radio. It has a listing or a recent listings, and it has one that's called Local. And for me, Local is Detroit, so it shows Detroit for me. But there's a let's see, there's Atlanta, Baltimore, Boston, Charlotte, Chicago, Cleveland, you know, and the list goes down. Unfortunately, nothing outside the U.S., so you're probably not going to be too happy with that.
No, and Roger
Bourne... And you can mark stuff favorites, by the way.
Yeah. Roger Bourne was saying he actually has this on his iPod Touch, and they're using it on Wi-Fi around where they live because there's so many hotspots.
And I just fired up the application. I went to the 80s channel. And it's playing a Duran Duran tune.
Yep.
One thing I don't like about the application, it has its own volume control that is completely independent of the iPhone's volume control. So if I'm listening to a song, like right here, I'll go back and hit play again. And I turn down the volume on the iPhone itself. It works. But I can also control it through AOL Radio itself. But they work independently of one another. So if I have the volume of the phone all the way down and I fire up AOL Radio and I crank it up, I'm not going to hear anything because the actual phone volume is down. That doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, and of course I can't listen to AOL Radio if it's not actually running. And because nothing can run in the background on the iPhone, I can't fire up AOL Radio, start listening to music, and then turn around and make a call or browse the internet. I can't do anything but listen to AOL Radio. I don't blame necessarily AOL Radio of that because Apple doesn't allow things to run in the background. But I think that is a technical limitation that Apple is imposing on this device almost arbitrarily because this is an application that should definitely be run in the background.
I think if they let apps run in the background there, they'll worry about them just swallowing the memory up and crashing the phone.
Oh, yeah, because that's not happening already.
Well, yeah, I mean, it would be happening more. I've used apps on the Windows mobile devices and BlackBerries that do that. They run the background, then they just kind of take the thing over and bring it to its knees, and that's not something you want to happen. Now, I agree with you. With something like AOL Radio, it would be very, very good if it could run the background. But
I still love it, though. It's still a great application. Yeah. And I've been a fan of AOL Radio long before the iPhone came around, when John Nemirovsky wrote an article up at MyMac.com a number of years ago talking about it. It piqued my curiosity. I downloaded the Macintosh client for it, and I've been using it ever since. I think it's fabulous. I think it's a great... And the thing is, the one on the iPhone has many more channels because it's got CBS Radio, whereas the AOL Radio on the Mac doesn't. Or if it does, I haven't updated it in a while, so maybe it does now. But still, it's fabulous. And quite honestly, I don't usually listen to music when I listen to AOL Radio. I usually fire up the comedy channel because it's completely uncensored, and they have really great content. So go figure. Let's jump over to our sponsor before we wrap this segment up and listen to our interview and then Sam Levin. Our sponsor, of course, is Otherworld Computing. I was looking for a product that's kind of unique and could be very useful to somebody. You remember last week we were talking about the used iBooks that they had?
Right.
And a lot of those, in fact, most of them didn't have an airport card in them. So you'd have to buy an airport card to connect it to the internet or your wireless network. Well, there's a lot of Macs that and people have sitting around their house that they don't have wireless for, thus they're probably not connected to the network.
Hmm.
How do you get those computers connected to the network? Well, here's a nice little device from Asus, and it's the USB wireless adapter. It's 802.11 B and G adapter. It's only $30.
Yep.
You plug this little thing into your USB port. You have to have a USB 2.0 port, obviously, for the speeds. And it just works. It has the best compatibility in the market. It works with Mac OS, Windows 98, Even 2000
Linux.
XP. It works with Linux, Red Hat, 7.1 or later.
Yeah.
It just works. It's a great... And it even supports 64 or 128-bit web support.
Yeah, and WPA as well, which is more important because WPA is really what people should be using on their wireless networks nowadays. I mean, it's really quite rare to get a wireless device that a USB wireless device that actually works with the Mac, because so many of them are just really cheap devices churned out from Taiwan or China.
You do have to be running Mac OS 10.3.9 or later.
Yeah. But so many of them will only work with Windows, and they only come with Windows drivers, and it can be really hard to try and get them working on the Mac. So the fact that this has, it's being sold by Otherworld Computing, obviously they're Mac guys, and you can guarantee that you'll have no problems running this on your Mac.
In fact, if you go to the product page and buy it from there, there's also a link right there that says download latest drivers here, which is so nice to see.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I don't know if it does support macOS 10.5, but quite honestly, if your computer has 10.5 on it, you probably either already have a wireless card or it's already connected to the internet. So I don't think that's that big of a deal. I just think, though, for $30, you can't go wrong. I've never tried it. Let me back up and say I haven't tried it. But, hey, I would be willing to give this a try if I wanted to. Like, I've got a... what is that? That's a Lombard PowerBook. I've never had that hooked up wirelessly. When I had it in the kitchen, I literally ran a cat cable from one room, a couple of rooms, and drilled a hole through the wall.
The Lombard doesn't have USB 2, though, does
No, it?
It
doesn't. It's one. Right. Yeah.
So here's a tip for listeners who might have those older PowerBooks that don't have USB 2 but do have a PC card slot. If you go onto eBay and you buy yourself a Dell TrueMobile 1150 PC card that will just go in the card slot on the side of the PowerBook, that will appear to OS X as if it's an airport card and will just work with the drivers straight out of OS X, 10.3, 10.4, or 10.5.
Now, if you can get it on. Here's something. Let me go back and check that again. I want to make sure that the Asus wasn't the same. That's just the host interface, USB 2.0. The thing is, I went back to the Otherworld Computing site.
Yeah.
And I found another one, an Edelmax NMAX wireless router. It's an 802.11n router. Now, this thing is $55. And it says bus type USB 2.0, but it says above it, let me find it again, supports USB 2.0 and 1.1 interface, which tells me for $55, that this would work with the USB 1.0 port. But the problem is, even though it's an N router, if you're connecting through a 1.1 port, it's going to be kind of slow.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to find out if the $30 Asus one will work through the 1.0 port or not, because quite honestly, if it does, I might pick one of these up myself. I'm not seeing where it does, but I'm not seeing where it doesn't either. So, you know, it says host interface USB 2.0. So I'm going to assume that you got to have a 2.0 port, which limits it as far as my older laptop. But I still think this is an extremely useful product.
Absolutely.
Especially if you've got a Mac that say, an older PowerBook or even an older MacBook Pro or a MacBook that the network card's gone bad in it. Here's a cheap solution.
Or even if you've got, say, the first-generation iMac, the Bondi Blue ones, those had USB ports on.
Okay, wait a minute now. Wait a minute. Right at the top of this page, David, surf the web, network wirelessly with any Mac or PC that has an available USB or USB 2.0 port. That tells me that the $30 Asus
should will be able work to do the same thing
with my old PowerBook.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, should do it. And the thing is, at $30, I mean, if you want to get a proper airport card, it's going to cost you a lot more than that because they're pretty rare nowadays.
Yeah.
And so they do command a premium on eBay.
Now, let me say, this is called the Asus AdLogix WL-167G wireless, blah, 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 blah. I'll put a link in the show notes for show 192.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, it does. So if you're interested in this, this is where you're going to want to pick it up from. Good product, I think. At least it sounds like it.
And as always, you can always count on the coolest stuff from OWC.
You're such a shill.
Yeah, I know.
Well, guys, I think we're going to wrap up our segment. We've got an interview to play still and Sam Levin's cool Mac picks. We'll be back next week. Any parting thoughts? Anything that you guys want to say? Going once?
I'm good, man.
Going twice, David?
Yeah. One thing I'll be working on this week, I'll be looking forward to talking about this next week, is getting OS X working on a MSI Wind Ultra.
Oh, you're going to try it, huh? Was it Andy Anako? Somebody like that got it working on that exact same machine.
Apparently it's not too bad to do, so I'm definitely going to be doing that this weekend, so I shall report back to you next week.
You've got all the coolest toys.
Yeah, I've got the coolest toys and no bank balance.
I'll take the bank balance. As a parting thought, if anybody's looking for help, I'm out there. I'm looking for a job again, so I have mortgages to pay. As such, if you guys want to donate to MyMac.com and help us keep the site running, go up to MyMac.com, go on the right-hand side of the page, and there's a PayPal donate link. Send us $1 million, and you'll make me happy. And we're back. Last on MyMac Podcast 188 at the WWDC, We had a lot of fun on that show, and one of the developers that we spoke to was Bill Dudney. Hello, Bill.
How you doing, Tim?
I'm doing really great, and hopefully you're doing great because you've got three different applications in the App Store for iPhone right now.
Yeah, I'm doing really good, thanks.
So are you a millionaire already? You can completely retire and buy your dream home, or not quite yet?
You know, I'm not really sure. Since I don't have any download numbers yet, I'm sort of banking on buying a latte, and we'll worry about the Lamborghini later.
So does Apple give you any kind of indication when they're going to let you know how well or how poorly that your applications are doing, or is it just kind of up in the air right now?
It's kind of up in the air right now, and I have no insight into the internals of Apple, but just based on what happened on Friday, I think part of it is due to the server meltdown. They had, on Thursday, they had download numbers, and then that went away, I don't know, probably 6 to 10 hours after the App Store opened when the server started croaking. So, you know, I'm kind of bummed about that, but the Dot game has been in the top 50 games since the store opened last Thursday. So, you know, it's probably doing pretty well with 10 million downloads.
Well, I finally got my my iPhone updated to 2.0, and the very first thing I downloaded was the $1.99 Dot game.
Hey.
And I told you I was going to buy your application.
Yeah, that's very cool. Thank you.
And I knew you were going to be here this week. That's right. And then later in the day, actually Saturday, I picked up Riddle Racer, but let's start with Dot Game.
Sure.
You know, this is something that I used to play on a piece of paper in school with people, you know, other students, and I played this in restaurants with my parents because it would be on the dinner mat, the dining mat.
Yep.
And it's just a grid of circles that you have to connect with a dot, and if you make the square, you get to put your initials or you get to color it in with your crayon, whatever. That's basically what this game is, but for the iPhone.
Yep, exactly. It's really simple concept. It's the kids love it. We have it integrated with your photo library. So if you go over to the backside, you can actually put your kids' photos attached to their player.
Oh, right? instead of the little colored dot.
Exactly. So when they get the square, it'll stick their face in, and our kids love that.
So you can play it with multiple people. It's not just a one-player game.
Exactly. And soon, I don't know how soon, probably 3 or 4 weeks, because the update time right now on apps is pretty slow in terms of getting new apps uploaded, but we're going to add a network version, so if you have two iPhones, you can play together.
Awesome. That would be really cool. I got to tell you, though, the first time I played it, I whipped the computer's butt at it. I think it scored a 4, and I had everything else.
Yep. At level 1, the computer's really easy to beat. if you turn it up to level 3, I think you'll find it'll give you a bloody nose, though.
A little more challenging.
I'm going to have to try that, then, because I haven't. Because, quite honestly, there's so many things going on with the App Store right now that I've been downloading like crazy. I'm on my 6th screen on my iPhone.
Wow.
But the Dot game is on the second screen, because the first screen is, you know, all the regular Apple stuff.
Yeah.
So the Dot game, $1.99, anybody listening should definitely go pick it up. What's $2? You know, you could spend $2. Let's talk about Riddle Racer. Tell us about this game, because you've got two different versions. You've got the one that's $4.99, and you've got a free version, Riddle Racer Lite. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so Riddle Racer is a puzzle game, and the idea is you're trying to get your race car into the finish line in the center of the game board. And we released it, and we sort of had a bunch of ideas of what we thought would make it fun to play and easy to play, and we weren't getting a lot of feedback from the users. So we stripped out, there's a total of 40 puzzles in the game. We stripped out 36 of them, put one puzzle in from each of the different levels, and released that as a free version in Riddle Racer Lite so people could get a chance to play with it without committing anything except, I don't know, 70K of download space or whatever. So, so the free version lets you play one puzzle from each level and see if you like it. And it also, what we were really hoping for is that it would generate some feedback, and that's exactly what's happened is some of the comments. You know, some of them are sort of silly, but some of them are actually very constructive. So we're going to take that into account for Riddle Racer 2.
How important is the reviews in the App Store to you guys?
It's very important. You know, there's some reviews are like, oh, this is stupid, it should be free. Well, okay, you go build it.
Of course, but you're going to get that no matter what.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I just let that roll off my back. There's a lot of people on the Mac Small Business mailing list that are sort of upset about some of the negative feedback and some of that silly stuff. But for me, it's exceedingly helpful to see reviews like, I really like this, but I couldn't figure out how it worked without really messing with it, or, you know, stuff like that. And so that really helps me understand, oh, well, the metaphor that I built into it to help people understand isn't working, so I need to do something else. So that kind of stuff is very, very helpful.
Well, now, on both of these games, do you include kind of a instruction manual so that they can figure out how to play the game? Because with the way the iPhone, you know, the interface is, it's not always intuitive.
Yes, exactly. And something that I found that that really surprised me, having been a developer and playing with it, and, you know, I mean, this is kind of dumb on my part because I am a developer, but the little I button on the bottom right-hand side,
yep,
flips it over to the flip side. I just assumed that was like a cosmological constant, that everybody who touched an iPhone intuitively knew what that did. And I've gotten some feedback from users that say, I can't find the help. And we put it prominently on the flip side. When you hit the I button, there's a help button on the top, and a lot of people aren't able to find that. So that's another thing that we're working on, is what's a good way to incorporate that.
Well, is there a splash screen? Is there a splash screen that comes up when the game fires up?
We could do a splash screen, and I actually thought about that, but I don't like all the stuff that I came up with. I didn't really like, and so, you know, we'll be revisiting that for Riddle Racer 2 especially.
Well, I know that Twitterific has this. Whenever you start something new, this helpful, I'm using my fingers in quotes here, this helpful thing slides down on your screen, and it's extremely annoying. And there is a button that says "Don't show me this again." Unfortunately, at least for the free Twitter application, I've clicked that every time, and it still pops down every time I click. So it's like, oh, stop, I know. But that might be some kind of an idea. The first time someone does something, it slides down, but then it goes away forever.
Yeah, that's what we were thinking, maybe doing that. We also have something that we do have integrated that it doesn't seem like people are finding, is the question mark at the bottom of Riddle Racer. If you click on that, it flips the page over, and will let you actually play the solution. So if you click the play button, it'll actually animate through how to solve each of the puzzles.
Awesome.
Then you can also like step through it single at a time if you just want a little bit of a hint on how to get started, and you can go backwards and forwards and stuff. So there is some stuff built in. We just have to come up with a way to make it more obvious for people to find it.
Now, Bill, at your website, galafactory.com, under the product section, you have available now free web apps. Are these some of the ones you're working on to port over to the iPhone later?
Yes, actually, good question. We are we'll probably port Moncala. We have talked about doing Ball Blast, but you know, that's one of those games that when it came out, it got a bazillion hits, and then over time, that's really dwindled down. So I don't know if that one's popular enough for us to do. We have a couple of other ones that we're doing, like Riddle Racer, that aren't available on the web, and part of that is because we didn't feel like it would be as a development team, like it would be very straightforward to build something like Riddle Racer in JavaScript. So
how many products does Gala Factory Software have in the works? Not just for the iPhone, but in total, what kind of products are you guys working on?
Yeah, so we have several. We have a stack of 4 additional games that we're working on for the iPhone. And it's, I mean, I say us, it's my wife and I and my 12-year-old son.
That's an us.
And your son does most of the work, I'm guessing.
Well, he's cheap. You know.
He's really cheap. No, actually, he's a Blender and Photoshop whiz. And so he's done a lot of 3D models for us. All the stuff in Riddle Racer, he actually put together all those icons. And
wow, at 12 years old?
Yeah. He's
That's amazing.
It's pretty cool. So he's he's a nutcase when it comes to Blender. He just loves that stuff. So so we drove him nuts trying to get him to change it and tweak it and mess with the colors and stuff. So,
I gotta go to school, Dad.
Yep. You can go to school after you finish those icons, boy.
That's right. You're not really that hungry, are you?
No. No, I play second fiddle. We homeschool, and so he's got to get all his schoolwork done before he can do anything for me. So
that's probably a really good idea.
Yeah.
So what else do you guys, what else are you working on?
Yeah. So the next new game that we're going to have is kind of like Mastermind. I don't know if you've ever played that game. It's a puzzle cracking game.
Yeah. Long time ago.
Yeah. So that one should be out in, it's probably 3 weeks away, maybe a little bit longer than that. And then we have a couple of other,
what's that one called?
It's going to be called Codecracker.
Okay.
Yeah, so that one will be up pretty soon. And then we have a couple of other apps that we're working on that are longer term. We want to build some recipe and meal planning applications, or an application that helps you do meal planning and grocery shopping stuff.
That would be nice.
Yeah, I do all the grocery shopping. I'd be very interested in that.
Yeah, so I mean, imagine the application is basically you have a meal plan for a week. You tell the application what you've got in your cabinet, and it'll generate a shopping list, and you can take it with you to the grocery store.
Bill, what's the biggest challenges for developing on the iPhone? Obviously, a different form of user interface, but is there any particular things about the iPhone that makes it really challenging?
You know, I have been exceptionally excited and surprised at how similar it is to developing for the Mac. So I've been doing Mac stuff for a long time, since way back when it was Next. And it's so similar, it just blows me away. There's a few things that aren't as straightforward because there's just not enough space for the stuff on the iPhone. So there's a few things that are a little bit more difficult, but for the most part, it just totally blows me away at how straightforward it is.
I know that I saw today that the Force Unleashed is coming to the iPhone, which kind of surprised me. As someone that just uses, I'm obviously not a developer, but for somebody that uses the iPhone, one of the most annoying things I don't like about the iPhone, I should say, is my finger keeps getting in the way of stuff. I can't see what I'm doing because I have to swipe my finger. Or games that really take advantage of the accelerometer, I'm moving the screen away from my face and away from my eyes, so I got to move my head to keep it in sight. I can't see it as well, especially like Cro-Magnon racing and stuff like that, where you got to tilt it forward or to the side, and you can't see it as good. I didn't think that was going to be an issue, but for me anyways, it kind of is an issue.
Yeah, and it's just like any kind of software that you build. It's so important to think through all those usability things. And it would be really simple to, or not really simple, but relatively simple to add accelerometer control to an application, but you have to really think through the details of that kind of stuff. Is this going to rotate the thing away so people can't see it? Is it going to make them throw their iPhone through the window like that lightsaber application? I don't know if you guys have played with that, but
yes, I have.
I knew you would have.
It just pushes a button and it makes the lightsaber sound. It doesn't really do anything.
When you fling it around, it changes the pitch and everything of the sound.
Right.
So, you know, you can like pretend to be in a lightsaber. And that application actually came from the Mac when the accelerometers first got into the laptops.
Yes, I remember that.
Right, and so people were like throwing their laptops on the floor while they were trying.
You guys keep talking for 1 second. I'm going to go grab my iPhone. I've got to play you guys a demo of the best application ever written for the iPhone. But while I'm gone, it's only going to take me a second. You guys keep going, so go ahead, Guy.
Okay, Bill, I wanted to ask you, besides stuff you've done for the iPhone in particular, software, you've also written a couple of books.
Yes.
Can you tell me about them?
Yeah, sure. So the first one is on Core Animation. It's a developer-focused book to teach people how to build animated applications on the Mac and the iPhone. So it goes through the technical gory details of how all that animation stuff works and how to get it pulled into your application.
Do you feel that developing for the iPhone has been easier or harder than developing for OS X or Windows?
Well, it's tons easier than developing for Windows, but that might be because of my personal bias. in terms of developing for the Mac, there are places where it's more difficult because of things that they had to leave out. For example, some of the networking stuff on the Mac has higher levels of abstractions that are easier to work with than some of the stuff that's on the iPhone. You can do all the same stuff. It just takes more code to do some of it on the iPhone than it does on the Mac.
Okay, so this book is called Core Animation for OS X and the iPhone, Creating Compelling Dynamic User Interfaces. And that's going to be coming out very soon, as I understand.
It is. It's complete. We are waiting for the iPhone SDK NDA to be lifted before we can actually put it on paper.
And who's that being sold through?
It'll be on Amazon and at all your major bookstores and stuff, and the publisher is called Pragmatic Programmer.
Okay, and you've got one other book that's coming out later this year.
Exactly, I sure do. So I've got a book on specifically focused on iPhone development, and I'm co-authoring that with a couple other guys, and we are very close to being at the midpoint. So we're about halfway done. We have another probably 6 to 8 weeks of intensive writing to go, and then it'll go through tech review and a bunch of editing steps and stuff like that. So we should be on bookshelves no later than early December.
Okay, and wow. And I guess the other two authors are Chris Adamson and Marcel Molina, is that correct?
That's exactly right.
Now, are you guys physically located near each other, or is this all done through emails and Skype and all that other happy stuff?
Yeah, exactly. A very distributed team. One guy's in, I think Chris is in Ohio right now, and Marcel, I think, is in Austin.
Texas.
At least he's in Austin from time to time. Yeah, he was in Japan a couple, 3 weeks ago. So we're all over the place.
Okay. Now, as a developer, you probably don't like to hear that I think the best application ever written for the iPhone is not one of yours, Bill. But I'm going to give a demonstration. I'm going to hold up the phone, make sure that the volume's up. Greatest application ever. It's very simple, though.
I got to have more cowbell.
It's called More Cowbell.
is that a free app, Tim?
Yeah. That's all it does. But I got to have more cowbell. Oh,
God. That's beautiful. You know, my personal favorite is the flashlight application.
Yeah, you know, some of those, it costs money. I couldn't believe it.
99 cents. You know how long it takes to develop that?
Probably 99 seconds.
Literally a quarter of a second. Like, it's the default application that comes in the developer tools when you say, I'd like to start a new application now, please. The application that pops up is flashlight.
And yet Apple's letting four or five different companies sell an application that basically does just that.
Isn't that nuts?
That's crazy.
I don't really fault Apple, though. Honestly, as a developer, it's sort of a slippery slope if they were to say, oh, well, that's stupid. It's a flashlight application. Well, then, you know, if some poor new developer who'd spent 6 weeks building, you know, some really simple to-do manager or something, and Apple said, well, that's stupid, you know? So I sort of give Apple a pass.
They're trying to be careful, you think?
Yeah, I think Apple should just let, you know, as long as it doesn't violate the terms of the App Store, I think they should just let them sell and let us as users sort them out. And
yeah, but you could say that, but look what happened to Nintendo when they really let their guard down on the types of games that they would allow on their boxes. It really got to the point that everyone knew that if it's a new game for the Nintendo system, it's crap. And that's how Sony really started passing Nintendo for the number one game developer.
Yeah, and I think that there's a certain risk of that, but keep in mind with Nintendo, you got to go to Walmart or whatever to buy the game, and there isn't a list of 400 reviews that say this is a stupid application or this is a stupid.
Good point. Absolutely a good point. Well, Bill, we want to thank you for coming on the show this week. When you get a new application, man, just send us an email, and we'll get you back on the show here soon because I think you got a lot of insight to the iPhone as a developer that we simply don't have, and I think that our listeners really appreciate hearing it from your end of the spectrum. It's really interesting to me, so thanks much for coming on.
Oh, you bet, Tim. Thank you very much for having me.
And we'll be right back. And we're back, and it's once again time for Cool Mac Picks with Sam Levin. Hello, Sam Levin.
Hey, how are ya?
I'm doing well, playing with my iPhone all the time. I'm sure you're doing the same.
As we speak,
playing with the iPhone. Will you put that down? Put the iPhone down. Man, it's a whole different world now. Everything has changed. The sun is a little warmer. The weather's a little nicer. The iPhone 2.0 comes out, and everything's great, right? Well, maybe not.
Not everything, but it's looking better.
It's looking better. If you listen to the beginning of the show, Sam, I know you weren't here at the time, but when you listen to the show back, you'll see that I've kind of got a different take on things. But anyways, so what's new? What's cool this week, Sam?
Well, you know, I'm looking at all sorts of cool stuff, not just specific to iPhone, but let's just start off with what I call my cheap thrills. But they're not cheap, but it's a company called Innovellus.
I thought it was going to be Guy Searle. I was kind of worried there for a second.
Innovellus makes a very cool product called Bud Fitz. That's all one word, Bud Fitz. If you go to budfitz.com, you'll see what they make. How many of you have tried earbuds? You stick them in your ear and they fall out. Whether it's Apple's or any other earbuds that are inner canal earbuds. I'm one of those people that it just sometimes they just don't work. So Bud Fitz has a simple solution that wraps around your ear. The Apple earbuds stick in a canal around this this channel, and it fits really well. And
it's kind of like it looks kind of like one of those Bluetooth headphone things that wrap around your ear.
Exactly, and it's $9.99. They come in clear, white, or black. I've just tested them with Griffins because I don't use Apples. I use others, and they work.
Do they?
Yep, they work. What can I say? It fits. I mean, it works. And they're available on Amazon. I spoke with the owner early this morning, and he's getting calls from a lot of different people. I mean, people love the product. And it's just an inexpensive way to get the earbuds to fit in your ear. And I think it's great. For the price, it's even better. So awesome. Just check it out at budfitz.com. They come in three different colors. I'm using the clear because you can't see it then. And I love it. So check it out for all you guys.
I gotta have more cowbell.
Yes. Yeah. And for
it gets the cowbell award, right?
Anyone that needs more cowbell. So that's for anyone using earbuds. So next up, Kensington's come out with their second battery pack for iPod or iPhone called the Mini Battery Pack and Charger.
Now, this could come in very handy now that the iPhone, the new iPhone has been released.
Yep.
It's not the most battery-friendly phone out there.
No, and I just plugged it in. It's nice. It's small. It works with any of the iPods or iPhones that have a 30-pin connector. I just plugged it into the 3G iPhone, and it basically will charge your iPhone and give you an extra. Oh, they say it doubles.
Now, does it actually charge the iPhone's battery? Or does the iPhone run off its battery?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I'm reading the specs right now. It says power and charge your iPhone or iPod because there's a mini USB, so you can power it while it's plugged in to the wall socket or from your Mac. But it says, let's see, I don't know. It says
if it says power and charge, I would assume that it's charging up the iPhone's battery.
I think it
as
does
you're using
because
it.
I just plugged it into my first iPhone and it. It looks like it charged it for about 10 minutes. It looks like it charged it. But it's compact. I swear by one of these. I have their first one, which is great. It's a little bit bigger, and actually the gauges are a little different. But this is like half the size, and it comes with a mini USB connector.
So you charge it by your computer as well.
You could do that. Or what I do is use the iPod or iPhone charger and plug that into the wall, plug the mini USB into that and into this mini battery pack, and you're good to go. It's $49.99, and anyone that's going on the road and using their iPhone constantly, they're going to need one of these.
Yeah, it's groovy.
I mean, they're really going to need one. So that's from Kensington called the Mini Battery Pack and Charger for iPhone and iPod, available right now today.
Sounds
and then,
cool.
Lastly, I figured we would talk about, you know, an app. I mean, I downloaded, you'll see the video, probably next week we'll feature it. I downloaded a video at the Apple Store last Friday, not a video, a game, and I was like one of the first ones to get the iPhone, and I thought it would be cool to instantly buy something. So I did, and I bought Moto Racer from Freeverse. I don't know if you guys have seen this yet.
It's the motorcycle game?
Yeah. It's pretty cool in that they take advantage of the accelerometer on the built-in iPhone. And there's a bunch of different levels. Once you get to a couple levels, another biker will try to pass you and start hitting you over the head and do mean stuff to you. I think it's pretty fun, and it's like $9.99. I think it's worth it, and there's lots of cool sounds, decent graphics, very decent graphics.
I saw the screenshot. It looks pretty clean.
It is. It's pretty clean. Now, Freeverse is well known in the Mac gaming market. They make PC games as well for Burning Monkey Solitaire. I mean, it's just, their stuff is fantastic. They've won numerous awards, design awards for their games. And now they're going to roll out a whole slew of games for the iPhone. So I was one of the first to actually download it, try it. I bought it right there at the store, and it worked. So that's
let me quit, you know, let me plug our own podcast real quick, Sam.
Sure.
From February 1st of this year, 2008, show 169, we actually have a lengthy interview with the folks at Freeverse.
Great.
So go up to our archive page, click podcasts, and scroll down a little bit, and you'll find it. It's also in the iTunes store listing still.
Yeah. They're really cool people.
Fabulous.
Ian and Colin run the place, and they just build great Mac and iPhone games.
And so PC, you'll see they make PC stuff too. I mean, they make great stuff.
They do. They make PC stuff, but you know, I don't use a PC, so
yeah, we don't care about PC.
No, we don't care about it. So every week we're going to feature an app/utility game about the iPhone and some cool stuff. So I figured we'd talk about that, and hopefully next week we'll talk about some other cool iPhone apps.
Well, thanks for coming on this week, Sam. I look forward to talking to you next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
That's the show this week, and we'll be back next week. Bye.